Okay, good evening, everyone. This week's parasha is Parashas Re'eh, Tavshin Ayin Tes. We will begin in the Art Scroll Chumash on page 998. And it is Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Aleph, chapter 12, verse 1. Eila chukim v'hamishpatim asher tishmerin la'aseis. These are the decrees and the judgments that you shall guard to keep, in the land that Hashem, the God of your father, your fathers, has given to you to inherit, all the days that you are living on the land. You shall utterly destroy all the places where the nations worship there. That the nations in those places worshipped. That you are inheriting them. Es Elohim, their gods, al haharim haramim, on the high mountains, valag v'ois, and on the hills, v'sachas kol eitz ranan, and under every leafy tree. V'nitatsam es v'chaisam, you shall break apart their altars, mishibartas matzevaisam, you shall smash their pillars, vashremtes refun ba'esh, and the trees that they worship you shall burn, uvasilei elohim the gadayun, and their carved images shall you cut down, vibaratem eshvimen amokim ahu, and you shall obliterate their name from that place. So here the Torah is telling us an obligation to destroy the places of vital worship. The things that they worship, those places, they are to be destroyed. Then it says, this pasuk dalet, loisasun kein l'Hashem elokeichem. You shall not do so to Hashem your God. Ki imel ha'makom asher yivchar Hashem elokeichem b'kol shivteichem. Rather, to the place that God chooses from all your tribes, l'sum Hashem elokeichem, to place his name there, the Shechnoi Sid Rishu, you shall seek out his dwelling place, Uvas Hashama, and you shall come there. Vaveisem Hashama, Eloiseichem, Vizivcheichem. You shall bring there your burnt offerings, your Shlamim sacrifices, Veis Masreiseichem, your tithes, Veis Trimas Yetchem, the separation of your hand, Vinidreichem, Vaiseichem, your vows, your donations, Uvachareis Bekarachem, Vitzainchem, the firstborn of your cattle and your sheep. All right, so let's put together what we have here. First, the Torah tells us to destroy the places the altars, the idols, the trees that are worshipped. Destroy the avodah zarah. Destroy the things that they worship. Then it says, don't do so to Hashem. Rather, the place that Hashem chooses to dwell, to rest his name there, that is the place you will search out. That is the place you will go to, and you'll bring there your sacrifices. So, again, the Torah starts off telling us to destroy the idols and the places of worship. Then it says, don't do so to Hashem your God. Rather, the place that he chooses to dwell his name there, that's where you bring your sacrifices. What does it mean exactly when it says, do not do so to Hashem your God? It starts off saying again, don't destroy idols. After that it says, worship, you'll worship Hashem where he chooses. And in the middle, it says something about not doing so to God. What do you mean not doing so to God? What is that referring to? So Rashi tells us the following. Loisasun kein, don't do so, means lahakter lashamayim b'chol mokeim, to offer, anytime you offer anything to God, you shall not do that in any place you want. Ki b'mokeim asher yivchar, but rather in the place that he chooses. Meaning, says the Sifsei Chachamim on Rashi, that the Pasuk, according to this explanation of Rashi, the Pasuk is saying that which we just said before, that you shall destroy the places where the nations have worshipped, on the mountains and the hills and under the leafy trees. Basically, that means that they chose to worship where they wanted to. You cannot do so when it comes to Hashem. You cannot just choose anywhere you want. Rather, the place that Hashem chooses to dwell his name, that is where you bring your sacrifices. So that's Rashi's interpretation. I'm going to share with you an interpretation from Rabbi Itzel of Elazar, who was the son of Rabbi Chaim of Elazar. And he said another interpretation. It's similar to Rashi, but a little bit of a different interpretation. And he starts off with the following. We know that the Torah talks about in a number of places that if a person unintentionally kills someone, under certain circumstances, what happens to that person? That person has to go to Arei Miklat. He has to go. He's exiled to the cities of refuge to protect himself from any from the relative of the person that he killed from taking revenge against him. And he's obligated to go there. There's an obligation to go there. He's not allowed to leave there. If he leaves there and the relative of the deceased person finds him and kills him, that relative is exempt. The person who killed the other person has to go to the Arei Miklat, city of refuge, and stay there until the Kohen Gadol dies. Now, based on Psukim, the Gemara in Makkah says that there were signs that directed people how to get to Arei Miklat. There were signs of signs on the roads leading to where these cities of refuge were. There were signs giving people directions where to go. It wasn't a situation where you started asking people how to get to this in the city, but rather to help the person who accidentally murdered get as quick and easily as possible to the city that will protect him. The signs were put up, directions were given to get him to the place of refuge. So Rabbi Yitzchak Lajner asks the following question. All right, I understand that it's a very important thing to give directions to help people get to the cities of refuge. It's important that they get there and not get lost. Why don't we find there were directions for people how to get to Yerushalayim for Yontif? Right? There was a mitzvah to go to Yerushalayim three times a year, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. We do not find that on the road to Yerushalayim there were signs that had on them Yerushalayim, like it says nowadays, right? There are no directions. The signs are given to get to the cities of refuge, but no signs by getting to Yerushalayim for Yontif. Why? Isn't it important that people should know how to get there? So he answered with something that we know about Shmuel's father, Elkanah. Elkanah, it's brought down, when he would go up to the Mishkan for Yontif, whenever he'd go to the Mishkan, he always took a different route how to get there. Why? Because every different route that he took along the way, he used to encourage people and invite people to join him to go to the Mishkan on Yontif. So basically, it's clear that people didn't go, even they were supposed to. They needed encouragement to go. And every year he took a different route to make sure that other people would see him and that he would encourage them to come to the Mishkan. But it seems that it wasn't necessarily, people weren't necessarily doing it. So Rabbi Yitzchak Lajner says that the same thing that's what the Torah wants here. You know why there's no signs how to get to Yerushalayim? Because if you're going to Yerushalayim for Yontif and you don't know how to get there, you know what the Torah wants you to do?
Yes.
It wants you to ask. It wants you to ask. Because when you ask how to get to Yerushalayim, you'll get into a conversation while you're going and you'll convince others to come along. Because again, apparently it wasn't so simple that it wasn't so easy and people didn't go. And therefore the Torah wants you to need to come on to other people to find out how to get to Yerushalayim so that you'll bring out this kind of discussion about going to Yerushalayim and other people be encouraged to do so. So the Torah intentionally didn't want to set up directions, didn't want to set up signs to help you get to Yerushalayim. On the contrary, the Torah wanted you to ask for help, so that by asking for help, you'll get other people involved in going to Yerushalayim. Therefore, B'Tzalel Lajna said, when the Torah says, when the Pasuk said, Lo'isasun kein la'Hashem Elokeichem, do not do so to Hashem your God, what it means is like this, similar to Rashi. The Pasuk said before that you should destroy the places where the nations worshipped on high mountains and on hills and under leafy trees. So why did they make their places of worship on high mountains? What was the purpose of doing it on a high mountain? So Ritzel Elojana said the purpose was so everybody should be able to see it, right? If the temple's on a high place, right, then everybody knows where it is. You could see it. And everybody knows they'll find their way. They'll find their way by seeing it up high. It was meant to be up high in order for people to be able to see from afar how to get there. Instead of having signs, they put it up in a high place so people should see where it is and follow along to get there. The Torah is saying, don't put the Beis HaMikdash up high so that people should see where it is. And based on that, they'll find their way to the Beis HaMikdash. On the contrary, Only the place where Hashem chooses to dwell His name there, l'shichnay sidrashu, you'll seek out His dwelling place. You got to see. The Torah wants you to seek it out. The Torah wants you to have to not to be able on your own to get it, but seek it out. Ask other people how to get there. Because by asking other people how to get there, you'll get people into the conversation by going through Yerushalayim, and that will encourage them to join along. So that was his explanation as to what it means. Don't do so to Hashem. Don't do so to Hashem, according to him, means that the same way that the way that the nations made their place of worship high on mountains, in order for it to be visible to people to see how to get there, on the contrary, you don't do that. You'll build a Beis HaMikdash in a place where Hashem, you'll go to the Beis HaMikdash where Hashem says it should be, and then you'll seek it out. You'll have to ask other people how to get there, so that you'll encourage them also to join along and join you going to Yerushalayim for Yom Tov. Okay.
But Hara Maria was high, it's supposed to be higher than all the other places around the area.
I don't know how visible it was, though.
There's other mountains around.
Okay, so you got it.
Except that Hadrian
okay,
cut the
let's move on. Page 1010. Perek Yudalid, Pasuk Aleph. Barim atem l'Hashem elokeichem. You are children to Hashem your God. Loisiskaydudu. You shall not cut yourselves. Loisasim bukarcha bein einechem l'meis. Nor may you make a bald spot between your eyes for a dead person. So Rashi explains that it was the practice of the Amorim, of the Amorites, that when a person died, they would cut themselves as a sign of mourning. And they would make this bald spot in between their eyes, on their head, like a bald spot on their forehead. And these were signs of great pain over the death, that they would cut themselves as a sign of how much they're in pain over the loss of this person. And they also used to make this bald spot. So this is a prohibition. This is a prohibition of the Torah to express your grief over a loss of cutting yourself. And there are people that have that practice. As a matter of fact, I think there's a certain group of Muslims that on the day of the death of whoever their prophet is, they're cutting themselves up right and left. They're bleeding all over the place. There was this practice that as a sign of grief over a loss, they would cut themselves and make this bald spot. So there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, on Daf Samaches Amar Aleph, brings the following story. Rabbi Akiva was a student of Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar died. It says that L'maitzoy Shabbos, after Shabbos, Pogabai Rabbi Akiva ben Kisri Lelud. Rabbi Akiva met the funeral procession and went from Kisri to Lud accompanying it. Okay. Hayamaka b'vsarai. And he was beating himself on his flesh, until his blood was flowing to the ground. And what did he say? He said, Avi, Avi, Rechav Yisrael Parashav, my father, the chariot of Israel and its horsemen, Harbe Mois Yeshli, I have a lot of money, V'ein li shulchani l'artzaisen, but I don't have a money changer to change them. So Rashi explains that means the analogy, meaning a money changer. What did you do? He gave him coins and he changed them. So Rabbi Akiva was saying, I have a lot of money. That means I have a lot of questions in my learning, but I don't have who to give me the answer. This is how he was bemoaning his fate. Okay, so this is the Gemara talking about how Rabbi Akiva reacted when his Rebbe passed away. Now the question is, Tosfos asks, how is he allowed to go ahead and beat himself to the point that he was bleeding? Tosfos says, you're not allowed to do that. Sarat Lanetvish, you can't inflict a wound on yourself to bleed because somebody died. How is he permitted to do that? Rabbi Akiva should have known he's not allowed to do that. So Tosfos says, Umishim Sarat Lanetvish, and because of the prohibition of, you know, cutting yourself for a dead person, Lekka, that doesn't apply here. Why did he do it? He did it because of Torah. Kedo Amar, as he said, Har be mois yeshli, I have a lot of money, ve'ein li shulchani l'artzaisen, but I don't have a money changer to change it. His whole expression of grief at this point was over the fact that he because of all the Torah that he lost. He didn't have his Rebbe anymore, didn't have his teacher anymore, there was no one like him, and therefore he was now at loss. He had no one to ask his questions to. When one is expressing his sorrow over the loss of Torah, then it's okay to actually even inflict a wound upon yourself to the point of bleeding. If you're doing it as an expression of loss, of the loss of your loved one, then you're not allowed to. But if it's an expression of the loss of Torah knowledge, then you are allowed to. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz explained this Gemara in the following way. The commentary of Sefornu has a beautiful beautiful thought here when regarding these two prohibitions of not to cut yourself and not to make a bald spot. He says, basically the Torah is saying that when you grieve over a loss of a loved one, you're of course you grieve. You have a mitzvah to grieve.
But not too much.
But not too much. There's a limit to what you do. There's a limit to what you do, right? You don't cut yourself. That's going too far. Why? Why not go so far? So the Sephardim explains that if, let's say, you lose a parent and there's no one to replace, right? You had a parent, no more, and the parent is gone. There's no one to replace. But there is someone to replace.
God.
You have another father. You have another parent. You have Hashem. You have the Rabbeinu Shalalem.
Yeah.
So although clearly you're very pained over losing your parent, but you have to realize, but you know, if you had another parent, it wouldn't be as bad. Probably as you don't have it. The point is that we look at it like we don't have another parent. Hashem, but the Torah says, sure you do. You have the Rabbeinu Shalalem. So to express such a intense degree of mourning for the loss of a parent to the point that you're cutting yourself and making yourself bleed, that's a problem. Because if you know, that you have the greatest parent, you still have the Rabbeinu Shalalem, then it's understood that you're going to grieve for your parents, but it's got to be limited. So on this prohibition of not cutting yourself, the Sefornu says, you cannot grieve in such an extreme manner because of the fact that you have a parent. You may have lost your father, your mother. You may have lost some kind of a relative, but you still have the Rabbeinu Shalalem. And then on the other prohibition where it says, and don't make a bald spot between your eyes for the dead, on that says it's a Sefornu, that the deeper meaning is the following. This expression, I'm not sure if this was unique to this expression, but again, a very strong expression of grieving when somebody dies, there's your loss, and then there's what you perceive as their loss. You perceive as they lost their life, right? Their life is over, right? You feel bad for the loss that they have. You're feeling it now. You're feeling there's your loss, what you're missing, and what you look at them and say, look what happened to them. Look what's with them now. They're not alive anymore. They can't talk. They can't be involved. You know, there's a certain feeling of loss for that person. Says the Rabbi Nish, says the Torah, wait a minute. Loss? Lost? And Hashem's not lost. The Neshama lives on. The Neshama goes to Eilam Abba. The Neshama goes to the world to come. Sure, there's a certain degree that you feel the loss and you go and express. But to go ahead and now express the feelings of they're lost, they're gone. They're not gone. They've gone from one place to another place. They first were part of this world. They're part of the physical world. Now they're part of the world of the Neshamas, of the souls. But they're not lost. So to grieve in such a way that you express, that you show, that you see this person is gone, they're lost. What a tragedy, what a loss for them. No, that's not the way to look at it, because they're living on. They're moving on. Now, there are mefarshim that say that part of sitting Shiva, right, mourning, part of mourning is to actually feel the pain of the neshama that's being judged, right? When a Shema passes on, when a Shema passes on, they go to a judgment for Hashem, from Hashem. So there's a certain degree that your mourning is an expression of kind of feeling, you know, suffering along with them because they're going through a very serious situation right now. But the intensity of loss can never be an intensity of loss because they're gone, they're lost. Because the facts are that the neshama lives on. This is one of our main beliefs. The neshama lives on, and therefore to express a grief over the loss of a life, that brings out the idea that they're lost. That's wrong because they're not lost. The neshama lives on. Therefore, said Rechaim Shmulevitz, do you know why you're allowed to? So that now we can understand better this story of Rabbi Akiva of why he was allowed to actually inflict himself. Because again, if you're talking about inflicting yourself for the loss of a parent, what do you mean? You have the Rebbeinu Shelaylam. But if it's a loss of Torah, that's lost. If you don't have your Rebbe anymore, you don't have him to answer your questions. And you can't say, find another one, which even though you might try to do that, it's not the same. Every Talmud Chacham is unique in his own, every great person is unique in their own way. It's not the loss of a person, but it's a loss of Torah. And when it comes to a loss of Torah, that is something that you can express in the most serious of ways, because that's a loss. Because that's a loss for you. In this world, that's a loss for you. That's a very serious loss. Normally, the prohibition is against expressing the fact of grieving too much or showing too much pain and suffering over the loss is because, again, you still have a parent, you still have the Rebbeinu Shelaylam. And that person's lost and not lost, they live on. But if you're grieving that because of their passing, now you lost Torah, that already is something that you can grieve at the highest level.
Rabbi Akiva couldn't pull the hair out of his head. He was bald.
Let's move on. Next.
No, it's
okay,
true.
Okay, let's move on. The last thought for tonight is going to go to page 1020. Page 1020, Perek Tes Zayin. Pasuk Aleph, chapter 16, verse 1. Okay. Shamar es chedesh aviv. Observe the month of springtime. Vasis ha-Pesach la-Hashem elokecha. You will perform the Pesach offering for Hashem your God. Ki b'chedesh aviv. Because in the springtime, in the month of springtime, ha-Tziach ha-Hashem elokecha me-Mitzrayim leila. Hashem, your God, took you out from Egypt at night. V'zavachta Pesach Hashem Elokecha Tzeinu Bakar. You shall offer a Pesach offering Hashem, your God, sheep and cattle. Makom Asher Yivchar Hashem L'Shaken Shema Hashem, in the place that Hashem will choose to dwell His name there. Lo Yiseichal Olav Chametz. You shall not eat chametz with it. Shivas Yamim Toichal Olav Matzah Yislacham Oini. For 7 days you will eat matzah, the bread of affliction. Because you left Egypt, you left the land of Egypt in a hurry. That you should remember the day you left Egypt, all the days of your life. Okay, so the pasuk starts off saying, you're going to do a Karban Pesach, because Hashem took you out from Egypt at night. The Karban Pesach is eaten at night. Then it says, you're not going to eat chametz, because you were in a rush when you left Egypt. When did that rush take place? When were you rushed out of Egypt? Was that at night or by day?
Daytime.
It's by daytime. So we have the pasuk telling us Hashem took us out at night, and then it says that we left by day. So which one is it? Is it by night or is it by day? So Rashi tells us that Rashi says, this is Rashi in Pasuk Beis. No, Pasuk Aleph. V'mitzrayim laila, v'haloi bayim yatsu. Didn't they leave by day? Shenemar, as it says, v'marchas ha-Pesach yatsu b'nei Yisrael. On the day after bringing the Paschal sacrifice, b'nei Yisrael left Egypt. El l'fisha b'alayla nosalem paru b'shus lotzeis. Because at night, Paro gave them permission to leave. That's why it means, that's why the pasuk says you left at night, which sounds like Rashi's saying you didn't actually leave by night, but you were free to leave by night because Parah already told you can go then. So we've got this, the Torah talking about leaving at night, and the Torah talking about leaving by day. And the way Rashi, and as Rashi says, you have when Parah gave her permission to leave, when they actually left. So what exactly are these? What are these 2 points? These 2 points where we have, we say that Hashem took them out at night because you left at night, and then they left by day. What exact? And Rashi tells us, but what it, Rashi says at night means he gave you permission to leave, but they didn't leave. So what does it mean exactly? Why are we calling it? What does it mean when it says Hashem took you out at night? I mean, you could have left, but you didn't leave. So at the end of the day, he didn't take you out, right? He took you out by day. But the answer is, and Rav Schwab explains this, that really there were 2 levels of freedom. At night, when the Jewish people were separated from the Egyptians, in the sense that the firstborn Egyptians were killed, and the Jewish people, the firstborn of the Jewish people, were saved, which is why they bring a Korban Pesach. On that night, the Jewish people left Egypt. The pasuk says they left Egypt. It doesn't say they left the land of Egypt. They left Egypt. They were still in the land, but they had no more connection to the Egyptians. This was the, and Rav Schwab says this was brought out by the fact that Hashem said, "No leaving your house tonight." There's no leaving your house tonight because that is symbolic of the idea that you're not part of this place anymore. You're not part of these people. You have no more connection to these people. You are now a separate entity of the Jewish people. You are, Hashem has, as the pasuk says, Hashem skipped over the houses of the Jewish people. These houses now became Jewish houses. They now became part of a unique and separate nation that's no more connected to Egypt. So at night when Parah said go, as Rashi says, at night when the Jewish people were separated through Makas Bechiris between them and the Mitzrayim, they left. What did they leave? They left Egypt. They were no more part of what Egypt was. They had no more connection to the people of Egypt. They were physically in the land of Egypt, but they had no more connection anymore to the Egyptian people and what Egypt was about. Anymore. Not only were they not slaves anymore, but even greater than that. Because you could say they stopped, their slavery stopped even earlier than that. They stopped working even earlier than that. Yes. But here the point is that they now took on this new entity of the Jewish people, Jewish people that now has no more connection to the Egyptians. At the end of the day, when did they actually physically leave? When were they physically rushed out? Which is why we eat matzah to remember how we were rushed out. The answer is that was in the morning because Hashem wanted them to go out in the middle, in front of everyone, not running out at night looking like they're trying to escape, but rather marching out like free men. So the Schwab points out very nicely in Pasuk Aleph. It says Ki b'chayde she'aviv, because in the month of springtime, Hatziach Hashem Elokechem Mitzrayim Laila, God, Hashem your God, took you out from Egypt at night. Okay. Then in Pasuk Gimel, when it says Leisaychal Olav Chametz, you shall not eat chametz. Shivas Yamim Toichal Matzah Lechem Oini, 7 days you eat matzah. Ki bechipazayin Yatzasa Me Eretz Mitzrayim.
Physically.
Here it says the land of Egypt, because in a rush you left from the land of Egypt. Before it says Hashem took you out from Egypt, and here it says you went out from. I'm sorry. Before it says Hashem God took you out from Egypt. And here it says, you went out from the land of Egypt. When you left in a rush by day, you were leaving the land. But at night, that's when you already left Mitzrayim. That's when you left the nation of Mitzrayim. And therefore, those are the 2 yetzias, the 2 exoduses, the 2 freedoms, what exactly happened by night and what happened by day. And this can be seen nicely in the fact that the wording that the Torah uses is different. The first pasuk, when it talks about leaving at night, it just says leaving Mitzrayim. And then when the pasuk talks about being rushed out by day, it says the leaving the land of Mitzrayim.